The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world view and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
In many times around the world, we are living in a turning point in history. And yet very few people are aware of history because few people seem to have been around when history was made. With the death of Francisco Franco of Spain and the coronation of a new king, we will see increasingly a move toward a coming third power block in the world. You are going to see inside Central Europe in the months and years ahead increasingly a move toward not only full political union, but full military coordination and cooperation. Eventually, you will even see a vast religious body getting into the act to bring Europeans closer together. For over 40 years, this broadcast have been talking of an impending third power block, the emergence of a gigantic superpower that would literally stun the minds of Western planets. A virtual Frankenstein built by the very hands and the dollars of those who saw future German divisions marching to the winds of the West in the following or the passing of World War II, as we strove to build a bulwark against communism, as we strove to follow the policy of containment. The idea of the creation of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, of the rearming then and some of our old enemies, which caused deep-seated feelings of apprehension in France and other nations, especially the Benelux countries, Britain, and other nations of the West. But it was called in those days a calculated risk. Well, believe it or not, Bible prophecy spells out what is going to happen inside Central Europe. In the very depths of Vietnam, America's involvement there, the tremendous loss of life and dead and injured, and the incredible amount of money that was expended in this no-win, useless war that tore America apart abroad and at home, I was saying repeatedly on this program, your attention is going to soon be swept to Europe and the Middle East. These are the areas of American concern. It may not have been at that time the areas of American involvement, but they have always been and will always be the areas of America's deepest concern. Now we're in the middle of the transitional age. Democracy is being threatened around the world. Democratic nations are being censored by the third world, who votes along with the communist bloc. Israel, the only democracy in the Middle East, is censored as being a racist movement of Zionists instead of a purely nationalistic desire for a homeland. A homeland that was guaranteed by the hollow shell of the, what I call, disunited non-nations, that sector of emptiness, that hollow sounding board for communist propaganda, and a third world klaxon of annoyance against the United States that stands on the East River in New York. And I have said time and again, New York City ought to borrow Arab money, buy the mess, and then default. But we're living in a transitional age. The passing of the old guard of Europe. The disappearance from the scene of those who actually shaped the course of history during that most torturous moment of recent world history called World War II. After amazing how few people are attained to the march of history, amazing how few know what is the overview of turning the disrelated problems, the energy crisis, famine in undeveloped nations, the financial breakdown of New York City, drug use among the young, rising crime, the death and passing of the old guard of Europe. All of these seemingly unrelated, different events are nevertheless a part of an overall pattern that is revealed in the pages of biblical prophecy. You know there is a mysterious prophecy in the book of Revelation that talks about 10 things that must arise in the area of Central and Western Europe. 10 things of ancient old things in biblical language. Years and years ago, in sermons and sessions and talks on this subject, I mentioned how in every nation in Europe there are pretenders to the throne. That just prior to World War I, when many of the old empires and the absolute monarchies were amalgamated in the various power blocks and then eventually destroyed, the emergence of new fascist dictatorships and eventually democracies of our post-war world, many people cannot seem to realize that there was a vast family, many branches of that family, where country after country all over Europe, Austria, Germany, Northern Germany, various provinces of Germany, there are various members of noble families who would be, let's say, in line for a kingdom, for the king of Germany emerged, for the king of Yugoslavia, or the king of Croatia, or Serbia, or the king of perhaps Austria and other portions of Europe. Now today there's the king of Denmark, there's the king of England, and now we have a king of Spain. The Franco era in Spain is over, and with its passing, undoubtedly will also pass Spain's relative tranquility the past 3.5 decades. Many of the plain truth in the World Moral Radio program were on the spot when these events were occurring inside Spain, and I want to take you now to the personal eyewitness account of the viewing of the body of Franco lying in state in Madrid just the other day prior to the burial. I listened in Spanish to the laudatory words spoken and the tears of the crowd. I take you now to Madrid and the voice of Rachel Trinity.
Immediately after the swearing-in ceremony at the Spanish Parliament building here in Madrid, King Juan Carlos I gave his first crown message. He paid his respects to Francisco Franco, who is at this moment lying in state at the Royal Palace, where tens of thousands of Spaniards are paying him their last respects as they file silently by. They have been in line for more than 15 hours in some cases, covering 25 miles and paying their last regards. King Juan Carlos, in concluding his first crown message, said the following.
Señores consejeros del rey, señores procuradores, al dirigirme como rey desde estas cortes al pueblo español, pido a Dios ayuda para todos. Prometo firmeza y prudencia. Confío en que todos sabremos cumplir la misión en la que estamos comprometidos. Si todos permanecemos unidos, podemos ganar futuro.
Translated, he said, Counselors of the realm, members of the Cortes, on addressing the Spanish people as king from this parliament, I ask God's help for all. I promise you resolution and prudence. I am confident that we will all fulfill the mission to which we are committed. If we all stand together, the future will be ours. Long live Spain. This is Rachel Tanky in Madrid.
What an impressive speech given by the new king of Spain, and I will tell you right now, I doubt very much that Juan Carlos, even though he has a tremendously thankless task ahead of him, is going to relinquish the reins of power to some other lesser individual in Spanish government. We may see him actually take up the reins of power just exactly as they were controlled by General Francisco Franco. We may find him actually moving in even far more decisive ways, moving into the mainstream of European life, because he is an ardent admirer of Europe, he leans toward Europe, and he wants, along with many of the middle-class industrialists in Spain, to move closer into the European economic community. That actually fits with what is plainly revealed in Bible prophecy. We can guess about the numbers of nations, and that will be an exact factor to go on, because the numbers are exactly the same. 10 nations, 10 countries, perhaps not countries, perhaps political entities within countries, but at any rate, by the time it is all consolidated in a one-third power block, there will be 10 kings. Now, perhaps biblical prophecy to be satisfied by presidents, premiers, or prime ministers. But on the other hand, wouldn't it be a fantastic fulfillment of biblical prophecy if in each case the major powers to emerge in the creation of the third power block in the world to arbitrate between the East and the West, and literally be bigger, both in industrial output and eventually in military potential, than either the United States or the Soviet Union? Would it be amazing that every member, every leader of each of those major nations were, in fact, a king? Let's go back to Madrid and hear how it was at the actual coronation ceremony of Juan Carlos.
Prince Juan Carlos of the Royal House of Bourbon was sworn in today, this afternoon, as King of Spain. The ceremony marks the peaceful transition of power from Generalissimo Francisco Franco to his successor. Former Prince Juan Carlos was personally picked by Franco 27 years ago in 1948 to be groomed and educated to become the King of Spain. Born in Rome and brought up in Portugal, Juan Carlos did not set foot in Spain until he was 10 years old and then the King-to-be. Now 37 years old, 6'3" tall, Juan Carlos is a great-great-grandson of Queen Victoria of England. He has been trained by the leading educators of Spain and was graduated from all three academies here, military, naval, and air. Let's listen as he is proclaimed as King Juan Carlos the First.
Surprisingly, 82% of the Spanish population is terribly sad over the passing of Franco, but about 33% or more of them are worried over the future. So we define a personal period. But people fearful told Rachel Sankey on the street of their apprehension over the future and of their really wistful nostalgia toward the good old days under Franco when they both said they had never had it so good.
After 36 years of power and 35 days of suffering, Francisco Franco is dead and buried. For most Spaniards, he was more than an authoritarian dictator, as a Spanish Gallup poll published over the weekend showed. 82% of the people polled were saddened by his death, and 33% were either worried or very worried over Spain's future. Franco's death is indeed the end of an era in Spanish history. Many Spaniards have never known another leader and are now coping with the transition. One worker's reaction was, "I have lived well under Franco. We never had it so good. There was work for those who wanted to work. Revolutionaries are people who don't want to work." A young businessman's reaction, "I'm very sad, but I believe Franco left everything well tied up so that we can enjoy peace." A 55-year-old lady, through her tears, stated, "He meant everything to me. We have never lived better." A 35-year-old waitress said, "I was born under him and I lived under him. I feel a great void." King Juan Carlos I has a period of time in front of him with which to show that he can effectively tie together the many currents of feeling now running through Spain. The public opinion poll just mentioned stated that 86% of Spaniards look with favor on Juan Carlos as king. Nevertheless, Spain has nearly 2,000 political prisoners now in jail and some 30 outlawed political parties ranging from far-right royalists to violence-oriented Maoists. Another Portugal is not expected, however, since the center of Spanish power, the army, has not just come through a number of discouraging colonial wars and is not considered politically active. If anything, it is solidly behind the king. Moreover, Spain is the 10th leading industrial nation in the world, while Portugal is Europe's poorest country. For all of this, the testing of the nation lies ahead. A whole generation of Spaniards have no political experience, and it remains to be seen if the various groups and blocs can work in harmony with the existing political institutions handed down from Franco. They still hold power even though Franco is gone, and they're reluctant to see change come very rapidly, if at all. The 27 years of training Juan Carlos has received to lead Spain are going to be needed to guide this nation through a potentially dangerous period ahead. The economic situation in Europe is not good. Civil war is threatening in Portugal. The Mediterranean is increasingly uneasy as conflict in Lebanon refuses to die out and the Palestinian question remains unsolved. This is Rachel Sankey in Madrid.
The big question ahead for Juan Carlos is whether or not he can avoid actual civil war. Some attempts by vast separatists, leftists, and others within the government already. Another assassination having occurred in a smaller northern town in Spain, he's going to have to deal with personally, which may threaten some of the security and the peace of the nation. So Spain's real leaders to rely on the army as the one major force to keep him in power. He's going to find that it's no solid pillar of strength. As a matter of fact, according to recent reports by exiles, as many as about 1,000 officers support the popular front of the Democratic Junta comprising communists, socialists, and Christian Democrats. So when Carlos is saying it's faced a difficult task of maintaining national unity in Spain while bringing the country slowly closer to the mainstream of European democratic tradition, he leans toward closer cooperation with Europe. Bible prophecy doesn't spell out which nation is which in the 10 kings that are listed as being a conglomerate called a great beast power that are literally at the behest of a gigantic religious organization. It doesn't give you the political entities or the exact identification of each one of those nations, yet history proves they will emerge in the confines of part of the ancient Roman Empire. Because believe it or not, it is merely another resurrection of basically the same system. It has already had many resurrections and deep revivals in that area of Central Europe. Most people do not realize that Mussolini called what he put together with the Axis of Germany, of Italy, and of Japan, and the Mediterranean part of it, he called the Holy Roman Empire. That was by naming the Mediterranean Mare Nostrum, our sea. It's no wonder the lessons of history are lost on most people, because most people simply don't remember very much about history. It seems lost on them because they simply weren't around. For example, you have to assume that you've got to be at least about 9, 10, 11 years of age to make any kind of a lasting impression for you, even remember the way things were back then. So people, if they were in the Great Depression, and about that age, it means only 9% of the United States population today could recall something like that, like World War I. Perhaps less than 30% could remember the days of Deep Depression and following along in the 1930s and coming out of Depression prior to World War II. Only slightly more than 1/3 of the United States population can personally identify with World War II, and surprisingly, only about 6 in 10 actually remember the assassination of President Kennedy. Well, here we are living in a time when history seems about to repeat itself. The old guard of the leaders of the world seem to be passing from the scene. Even the communist nations, the leaders of both communist China and Russia, appear about to be toppled by death, disease, old age. We don't really know what's going to happen when those leaders disappear. Brezhnev, Mao Zedong, what will happen then in those countries when the old guard passes from the present scene? It is believed that a step down is near for General Secretary Leonid Brezhnev, who has been suffering from some type of sickness, perhaps cancer. There's just rumors that is true. We wonder about Yugoslavia, whether the collective scene they're talking about there is going to work. And ever since the day Tito's name came to the fore, the resistance fighter against the Nazis, he was head and shoulders in political stature above any of his rivals. He's now an 83-year-old leader of this communist country. He's been a mainstay, which has held together that kind of a kaleidoscopic, crazy cult federation of differing nationalities, languages, and religions. They used to war with each other, and as a matter of fact, even different alphabets in that country. Just as Yugoslavia, the third coast, as various other groups which could, without the strong leadership to keep them together, have just as many serious problems as some of the other countries even now in the plains of virtual civil war. Numerous surges of aspiring political figures during the years advance that there is no heir apparent, however, to think of, unlike the transition underway right now inside of Spain. So as you look around the world, and you see the old leaders passing from the scene, newer, younger leaders emerging, you're seeing what is tantamount to a bizarre repetition of history. And most Americans are asleep to what has happened. It isn't necessarily true that an attending United States of Europe, if that's what it's called, a United Europe of some kind, has to emerge out of the present European economic community. But it's likely that at least the European economic community is going to play one of the most important parts in welding European countries together politically. Take a look once again at Spain. The reason Spain has been completely isolated from Europe, at least basically so, was because of Franco returning to Germany for the trial of the Stukadized bombers, German tanks, and German volunteer soldiers on behalf of Franco when he was trying to overthrow the old kingdom of Spain. Franco was, of course, pro-Nazi. He's the fascist. He's the last of the fascist dictators, at least in Europe. He's not the last of the fascist dictators on the world scene, by any means, but the last one in Europe. Following the loss of the Axis powers in World War II, Spain was virtually cut off from the West. But eventually, things began to warm up a little bit because the United States wanted something from Spain. He wanted bases. Now, with Portugal about to tear itself apart in civil war, with the bases of the United States in a big jeopardy out of the World War, the western flank of NATO very much exposed and open, the bases occupied by the U.S. Air Force in Spain become all the more important. When I was at the European Summit Conference of NATO, reported to me from there and saw President Ford and the prime ministers of about 19 other nations all in the same room and listening to their speeches and deliberations, I told you then that President Ford was stopping off, and you may not remember the name, down in Madrid to see FICO in one of his last public appearances. The reason Gerald Ford went to Madrid is absolutely obvious. That's to secure future guarantees on the possession of the United States bases inside Spain. Most interesting that not only is Juan Carlos is leaning toward greater cooperation with Europe, it would be good from the United States point of view because we don't see what eventually may emerge in Europe. We see it only as a complete Brussels-friendly ally of many quaint countries where we can go to take pictures of the castles along the Rhine, and we can stop off in the castles of wines of France and the past of Italy, and we can look at all the beautiful modern Roman buildings, and we cannot see the stars of World War III and turn to the back alleys of any city in Europe today, or so it would be. And so it's the tourist paradise, and most Americans do not realize that there are political voices behind the scenes right now inside of Europe that are crying out for more political clout from the European countries which are likened continually for an economic giant and a political war. Well, I think it's been true that there is a growing middle class of industrialists inside Spain who want Spanish government to lean toward more cooperation with the European economic community. So here you have a king of another nation emerging far more now in a European context under the leadership of Juan Carlos recently proclaimed king. Let's go back to Madrid and hear the analysis from Mr. Sampson about these industrialists wanting inside the European economic community.
A new middle class of businessmen and industrialists has developed here in Spain since the economic surge beginning in 1959. These men realize that the European economic community is vital to Spain's continuing economic growth. A number of Spaniards have told me that they are very much interested in joining the EEC. King Juan Carlos I is known to be an avid European, rarely making a speech in which Europe is left out. His first crown message this past weekend was no exception. I quote, "The idea of Europe would be incomplete without the presence of the Spaniard and without taking into consideration the deeds of many of my predecessors. Europe must take Spain into account, and we Spaniards are Europeans." End quote. In Brussels, common market officials have acknowledged that Spain is economically far more prepared to join the EEC than Greece, which has already applied to become the 10th member. Nevertheless, EEC officials insist that Spain must take some steps toward democracy and elected representation before membership could be considered. This is also true before any possibility of joining the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, I was told in Brussels. Yet Spain has much to offer both European organizations, economically and strategically. How long it will take to become a member of the EEC and NATO depends largely on the internal political situation here in Spain. Rachel Sankey in Madrid.
The countries today, I believe, are watched around the periphery of Europe are those of the nations of Greece, of Turkey, who are constantly bickering at each other and, of course, are on the eastern flank of NATO and could literally allow that flank of NATO to fall apart, but most critically, the nations of Spain and Yugoslavia, because when we had transitioned government to both of those, and for many, many years, we had expected that Yugoslavia would lean far more toward the west. Of course, the Soviet Union wants a corridor directly through Yugoslavia to the long, yearning for access to the warm waters and Soviet naval bases in the Mediterranean Sea. Soviet naval bases on the Adriatic would take the foundations of NATO, of course, because it would put Soviet naval units right at the very soft underbelly of NATO countries. And it would put the democracies of Italy, Greece, and Turkey in grave danger. Now look at the transition of governments around the world, the toppling of government in Europe. In countries all around the world, in the last 2.5 or so years, we have seen the toppling of the governments of West Germany through scandals, the toppling of the government of Britain, the toppling of the government of the United States, other countries inside Europe, and many other countries around the world where governmental transitions have been underway. Today, democracies are under attack. The third world emerges as increasingly a power. And so the fear of communism, nearly always, traditionally in Europe, has engendered an ultra-reactionary swing to the right, a desire for a strong, powerful, nationalist leader who will have the power to cut through all of the governmental inertia and red tape and to get the job done. As we see lesser succession, as we see additional threat of civil war and the very disruption inside European cities, we will see inside Europe more and more reaction from the right. We're living in a time of a bizarre repetition of history, and we may be living in the months just around the corner from the emergence of yet additional kings, absolute monarchs. You may as well say military dictators, but perhaps the name will be changed from many other countries in Europe. You may see the time when some of the Eastern European satellites of the Soviet bloc may move out of the Soviet orbit. You may see in months ahead Yugoslavia veer far more toward the west and actually have a minor war of some sort between Yugoslavia and the Soviet Union. We once and for all throw off the Soviet yoke. While it is not an important factor, nevertheless, is a factor that must be considered in Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia is a potential powder keg in the Balkan right now, because upon the death of Yugoslavian leader Marshal Tito, the Soviet Union had launched a sudden massive invasion into eastern Austria using Czechoslovakian troops as a vanguard. After that occupation is consolidated, the primary objective would be the invasion of Yugoslavia, and it's limited from the Soviet bloc from which it was expelled in 1948. That's the scenario for what is called Project Talarca, a detailed military blueprint developed by the Soviet High Command in the late 1960s, which has been exposed by Major General Dan Sedna, the detective from the Czechoslovakian military at the time of the Russian invasion in 1968. Well, all of this is contained in the current number of The Plain Truth. The Plain Truth is the world's unique news magazine that you can read in one sitting with articles of news and other very vital world events that you need to keep abreast of, the passing of Europe's old guard, Yugoslavia, potential Balkan powder keg, discussing about Juan Carlos Sanchez Pass, the trying to reign over a transition, a strange one, inside China, which nation summit promises a hard defeat. The Allied statesman said Henry Kissinger, November 1975, in case the post-war international order would not recognize the planet we inhabit today. Interdependence has spawned a host of unprecedented social, ethical, and economic challenges. No government alone can resolve the rage of problems before it. That's what the Secretary of State said recently, and it's so very true. So the Allied statesman who states the post-war international order, including the creation of the power blocks we call NATO, PINTO, and the various other organizations of states, such as that in Central and South America, the Organization of American States, could not have remotely invaded this interdependence. The absolute dependence of the American and other great Western democracies and governments on Arab oil, for example, and the kind of blackmail it would result in, and the unbelievable problems of double-digit inflation as a direct relationship to that dependency. The plain truth, it dares to make the truth plain, and it will be any subject may not be covered in the pages of the plain truth. The absolutely free of charge, all they would do is to address the letter to Garner Ted Armstrong, post office box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. That's Garner Ted Armstrong, box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Remember, there's absolutely no testimony with this current batter to you. The best of them is Garner Ted Armstrong, box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye to you.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Tedd, brought to you by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your request along with the call letter for this station to Garner Tedd Armstrong, Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales.